one time ago, and she says, "I am so hungry I could eat a cow." And Grady said, "You can't eat a cow." And Fiona said, "Oh, Grady, I'm just using hyperbole." And I thought that that word was hyperbole until last week, you know? And so I knew when Miss Martha was talking about being that hungry that I'd heard that in just the last 24 hours for sure. It was the summer of 1998, and we were headed for Chicago for my nephew Matthew's wedding in the western suburbs. We weren't living in Ashland at the time, though. We were 400 miles east of here. Ashland's only 6 hours from Chicago, but Bainbridge, Pennsylvania, where we lived back in 1998, was about 10 hours of driving, which in actuality, probably going to be about 13 hours considering pit stops and fuel stops. And we didn't pull out till mid-morning because we were going to leave my truck with one of my friends so that he could work on it while we were away. We were going to be away for a week. And this meant that we had to go 5 miles east. We had to go 5 miles in the wrong direction to drop the truck off at Dave's house. But what's 5 miles? Or 10 miles, actually, when you multiply it. When you're looking at 700 miles total. So we drove to Elizabethtown, and we were there in perhaps 10 minutes. It takes a lot longer to go 5 miles in eastern Pennsylvania than it does here. Okay, so whatever. We dropped the truck off, and I hopped in our car, and we departed Elizabethtown for my nephew's wedding. A few minutes later, I mean, just a few minutes later, we are actually still driving through Elizabethtown, through the town. And a little voice came from the back seat. It was 5-year-old Emily asking, "Is this Chicago?" She really didn't know. She really wanted to know. And even though it was a truly silly question, we said, "No, we have quite a ways to go yet." And boy, did we ever. I remember as we traveled, there were tornadoes to the south of us. We could see them off in the distance in Indiana. It was quite a trip. Now, I can imagine Moses and his brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, marching at the head of 2 million Israelites. They had probably gone about 40 miles since they left Egypt and the miracle at the Red Sea, the parting of the sea, the salvation from the Egyptians. It was only about a week after they left, but imagine how slowly a column of 2 million people and at least that many head of livestock, but probably a lot more. Just imagine how slow that moves. In my mind's ear, I hear a whiny voice saying, "Are we there yet?" And then another one that says, "Can we stop for dinner?" Or, "I'm thirsty." And you can count on the fact that it wasn't a beautiful little blonde is sitting in the back seat asking those questions. And this was the first week of 40 years. And it was going to be a long trip. But it was going to be a great learning experience, too. When you're traveling with children, there's a very good chance that of that same kind of thing. I'm thirsty, or I'm hungry, or I have to go to the potty. The thing was, Moses had thousands upon thousands upon thousands of children in the back seat, the children of Israel. But even with the cacophony, God proved that he was Jehovah Jireh, which would have been another good song for us to sing this morning here, which means God, our provider, because God proved it in so many ways. It's a pattern by now that's becoming more and more familiar, and it goes like this. Israel complains to Moses, and Moses complains to the Lord, and the Lord, usually in communication with Moses, brings to the situation both remedy and redemption. So I'm going to read through this, the passage, which begins in chapter 15 and ends in chapter 17. I'm going to read chunks of that. I'm not going to read the entire thing of at all this morning, but I'm going to read chunks. And so Exodus 15, picking up actually where we ended our reading last week, at verse 22. Then Moses made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Then they came to Marah. They could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, it was called Marah, which is, it means bitterness. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. And there the Lord made for them a statute and a rule. And there he tested them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians. For I am the Lord your healer." And then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. God provided healing. God, the provider, provided healing. The people of Israel had 3 days with no water. And then when they found some, it was awful. It was undrinkable. It may have even been dangerous. And either case meant that they were getting thirstier. And I loved what Martha gave those threes to us of how long you can go without water. And so the whining turned up a few notches, and Moses felt frustrated. Moses spent 40 years being frustrated, by the way. Okay, but God told him, this is interesting, as Martha pointed out, told him to pick up a log and throw it into the water. And now, being male, the natural inclination is to throw something into the water. Males just need to do that. They need to skim stones or just throw a boulder in. And if you know, and the younger they are, the more they don't worry about how much it splashes on other people around them. But this was a log. A log? But Moses did as he was told, and the water became instantly sweet. That is drinkable. My dad always used to say, the best water is water that doesn't have a taste to it. This was sweet water. It was not bitter. God had miraculously purified the water. Now, once again, as I've said over the past couple of weeks, there are endless attempts by commentators and detractors of what the Bible says. They try to provide logical explanations for this miracle. And when it comes right down to it, it is a miracle regardless. As I've repeatedly said, God can do what he wants with his creation. There are apparently trees in the region that are sweet and change the water. I just believe that God just did it because God can do it. And once this was done, God sent a proclamation that was full of promise. He would not send any of the diseases that the Egyptians suffered from. He's God, the healer. And then God proved it as they arrived in Elam, which had 12 wells and 70 palm trees. Now, here, where we have forests all around us, 70 trees doesn't seem like that much. But when you're in the wilderness with virtually no vegetation, an oasis with abundant water and waving palm trees is pure paradise. And then the Israelites experienced Jehovah Jireh, God the provider again, as God provided sustenance. He provided food and water. Move on to Exodus 16, picking up at verse 4 and reading to verse 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of God, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness. And behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, "I've heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. In the evening, quail came up and covered the camp, and in the morning, dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, that is, when it had dried up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. And then the people of Israel saw it, and they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, 'It's the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it, each of you, as much as he can eat, and you shall each take an omer, according to the number of persons that each of you has in his tent.' And the people of Israel did so, and they gathered, some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, which is a form of measurement, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, 'Let no one leave any of it over till the morning.' But when they did not listen to Moses, some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning after morning, they gathered each as much as they could eat, But when the sun grew hot, it melted. In the preceding verses, verses 1 through 4, as they move from the oasis of Elam, the Israelites were probably singing. It looks, it was a wonderful place. And they were stepping back out into the desert, but they were probably feeling pretty good about their rest stop. But as soon as they enter into the wilderness of sin, now it wasn't named after the word for rebellion against God, since it probably comes from the same word from which Sinai is derived, and this was, after all, the Sinai Peninsula. But as one commentator put it, as the story unfolds, we see that this wilderness did have a lot to do with actual sin. And as they're walking on, they start complaining again. They went from singing to complaining in record time, even for the accomplished whiners that they were. They hadn't even experienced hunger yet, and they were wondering about where the next meal was going to come from. They weren't thirsty. In fact, their water bags were probably full. But they were worried about where the next well was going to be, as if God hadn't done everything for them up until this point. They were forgetting about that. They were forgetting that they were dealing with God, the provider. And they were ignoring the obvious fact that in the darkness, they had a fiery pillar that led them along. And in the daylight, even as they're complaining about this water and food thing, they have a cloud going before them. They had all this, and yet they still doubted the Lord. So, of course, they started complaining right away. And God said, okay, I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you. Now, I tell people that I haven't smelled good for years. And then I have to explain to them what many of you already know, is that I lost my sense of smell at least a dozen years ago. I discovered it actually when I was walking with a dog in the dark because he had been barking at something, and a cloud went over me. And when I walked in the house, both me and Togo, smelling like the skunk that just had sprayed Togo, and I had no idea what that cloud was that went past me. I had completely lost my sense of smell. Emily and Kathy still had their sense of smell, and they told us to get out of there very good. But back in the day, especially after in the first 5 to 7 years after we moved here, when my smeller was actually working properly, I would be out for my morning jog and I could smell the bakery at Archway wafting. It's just not that far right across here. It would come wafting across the neighborhood. I couldn't tell exactly what they were baking, whether they were oatmeal or molasses cookies, or maybe I could smell some kind of fruity smell that it was probably their lemon cookies or their raspberry filled cookies. But the smell was wonderful. It was tantalizing. I hadn't had breakfast yet. Now, the Israelites didn't smell Archway. They didn't smell fresh baked bread off in the distance, or even cookies baking. But God told them that bread would be provided, bread from heaven. God may provide from resources that we never knew existed, and sometimes he provides from familiar sources and unexpected places, but this is still bread from heaven. And when the bread from heaven came, it was a white glaze on the landscape. After the morning dew dried, which is really funny because just yesterday morning, Grady was out and he was wondering why his feet were wet. And I said, "That's dew." And he said, "What's dew?" And I didn't know how to explain it to him. But for the Israelites, after it dried, there would have been manna there. So when the dew dried, that would have happened very fast in the desert. There was this sweet coating over everything. And the Israelites asked, "What is it?" Which in Hebrew is manna. So thus the name of the bread ever since is what is it? It reminds me of my friend Bob Havdi, who was a Mennonite missionary in Ethiopia, and they came home for a visit and they made us an Ethiopian meal. And I said, "Does this have a name or what?" And he said, "That's its name. What?" And here in Ethiopian, food is called what? Okay? And so for the Israelites, what is it? Was what was there in the morning. And they were to go out and gather up this. And from the description, it sounds like a sweet wafer. And now I'm sure that manna was much better than this since it was heavenly bread, but I just think about vanilla wafers, okay? I think of the kind of thing that you make banana pudding with. And I think, I'm making myself hungry right now, by the way. I think of that all out on the landscape. And we already know that back then, because it was God the healer and he had healed us, healed the Israelites of all the diseases, that the 6-second rule didn't apply here because there were no diseases. So God promised that his people wouldn't get salmonella or E. coli by gathering up manna off the ground. And they were to gather an omer, which was two quarts of manna per person. It seems like a lot. And again, there's a desire by commentators to figure out what kind of natural phenomenon this may have been. And apparently there's some kind of sap on a tamarack tree, which is the one kind of tree out there in that wilderness that is sweet and it's actually harvested. But that a certain, just like we have maple season here from February into March, that's a certain time of year there. The thing is, this was a year-round provision, not just one part of the year. God miraculously provided food in the form of a godly kind of bread for his people. And then, since God believes in a balanced diet, for protein, he provided quail, which would arrive every evening. Now, there is a scientific explanation for this. Migrating quail crossed the Mediterranean during migration time and fall exhausted onto the ground where they're very easily picked up. This is true. Sailors in the Mediterranean, and of course, this is the Bible, it's true, but sailors in the Mediterranean talk of quail landing on the decks of their ship, providing a nice quail roast for dinner. Once again, this migration only happens at a certain time of the year. Quail aren't always migrating from Turkey into northern Africa, but this happened year-round. For 40 years, not just during annual quail migrations. So that's the miracle. A little aside here, and it's kind of fun, but I hope that you can learn from it. Keith Green did a fun song on his second album, which I think might have been called So You Want to Go Back to Egypt, but the song that came from it was that very song, which have these lyrics. So you want to go back to Egypt, where it's warm and secure. Are you sorry that you bought a one-way ticket when you thought you were sure? You wanted to live in the land of promise, and now it's getting so hard. Are you sorry that you're out in the desert instead of your own backyard, eating leeks and onions by the Nile? Oh, what breath for dining out in style. Oh, my life is on the skids building the pyramids. Well, there's nothing to do but travel. And we sure travel a lot, cause it's hard to keep your feet from moving when the sand gets so hot. In the morning, it's manna hotcakes. We snack on manna all day. And we sure had a winter last night for dinner, flaming manna souffle. So you want to go back to Egypt, where your friends wait for you. You can throw a big party and tell the whole gang of what they said was all true. And this Moses, he acts like a big shot. Who does he think he is? Well, it's true that God works lots of miracles, but Moses thinks they're all his. Oh, Moses, put down your pen. What? Oh, no. Manna again? Manna waffles. Manna burgers. Manna bagels. Filet of manna. Manna kadi? That's how he ends the song, or the manna bread. And this implies that manna and quail got old after a while. And probably, I like variety. Maybe it did. But I do know that in other cultures, the same food every meal is a common thing. In the West, we're spoiled. We have great variety. We can have beef one day and chicken another day. We can have pizza on Friday and lasagna on Sunday. But in Kenya, if there's any breakfast at all, it's probably a piece of bread. But lunch is ugali and beef and some vegetables. Supper is ugali and beef and some vegetables. And ugali is like cornmeal mush, and they eat it with their fingers. They make a ball, and they roll the beef into it, and the vegetables, which is kale, and it's the same every meal. And that's the way it is in many cultures, and I'm thinking that it's probably that way for the Israelites too. Maybe they did have leeks and onions in Egypt, but I think they probably had some bread and some mutton too, meal after meal. So I don't think they were bored with their food because God was providing it. Everyone got what they needed. So no one had too much. No one had too little. They were specifically told not to keep any overnight. And if they did, it spoiled and stank and got worms in it. Graphic language here. But the fact is, disobedience brought distasteful results. However, there was one night when you could keep extra food, and that was the night before the Sabbath, which shows that God provides rest. Exodus 16, 22 to 30. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to be kept till the morning." So they laid it aside until the morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. And Moses said, "Eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none." On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each one of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. God wanted his people to have their time off. Sabbath was holy, and it was for them, and he wanted them to relax and worship, and rather than worry about gathering Sunday dinner. But of course, people being people, someone had to test God on that. Did God really mean what he said? And these may have been the same people who discovered that if you gathered too much and kept it overnight, it would have worms in it the next day. So on the sixth day of the week, they ate everything they had as usual. And when they went out on the Sabbath day looking for breakfast, there was nothing there, just as God had said. So they were hungry that day, and they didn't do it the next week for sure, because God means what he says. They needed to trust him that his word was true, and we need to learn that too. And when we're talking about manna, God provides a reminder. God told Moses to place a jar of manna, and this is in the remainder of there in chapter 16, and you can read that when you get a chance. He told Moses to place a jar of manna in the Ark of the Covenant, in the holy chest, as a reminder of his provision, as a reminder of his care. And if they ever wondered, as they wandered over the next 40 years, that God was up to, what God was up to, all they had to do was look at the reminder, that quart, that jar of manna, and he provided them that for them as they entered the land of Canaan. By the way, Martha, I was thinking, you said it wasn't wonder bread, but it was wander bread. So finally, God provides water from the rock. And this is where Martha ended up her children's time there, verses 1 through 7. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages. They had to go in groups. 2 million people had to move in stages according to the commandment of the Lord. And they camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore, the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock here of thirst?" And so Moses cried to the Lord, "What shall I do with this people? They're almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you, and there at the rock at Horeb, and you shall," Horeb was probably Sinai, Mount Sinai, "and strike the rock, and the water shall come out of it, and the people shall drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Here was a complaining and doubting people, but they were God's chosen people, and so he provided for them. And before we think that we would be any better than the Israelites, let me remind us that this was a rough time. It was an incredibly arid environment, the kind of terrain and weather conditions that actually suck the moisture right out of your body. The sweat comes out of you and it dries in a salty, crunchy film on your clothing. And there's always a breeze in the desert which dries you out even faster. And there's no doubt that these people were desperate, because they were thirsty. You get desperate when you feel thirsty and you don't see a drink coming along. And they started whining again and calling from the back seat and crying out, "Give us water that we can drink." And Moses had it. Already, after just a few days, and he throws his hands up into the air and said, "Oh, people, why do you argue with me?" And then he turned to God and said, "Why don't you do something? Why have you brought me out here? They're all ready to come for me and Aaron. Our lives are in danger." And the people of Israel and Moses and Aaron were forgetting What God had been doing ever since they left Egypt. He had been providing them with safety and deliverance and water and food and rest. Would he not do something now? So, of course, he did. He told Moses to take that same walking stick he used when he lifted it to part the waters by the Red Sea. And he was to tap it against the rock wall, and out of that solid rock came fresh, clean, hydrating water, because God would not ignore his people's need in their time of need. Why did they doubt? Bonnie pointed out last week, as she did the New Testament reading, that Jesus, on several occasions, looked at the people who he was preaching to, and several times to his disciples, and said something like, how long are you not going to believe me? How long? And he asks us the same question. When we doubt him, how long are you going to not believe me? God's the provider. He's Jehovah Jireh. He will always provide what we need, not too much, not too little. We say around here all the time, you can't outgive God. And that's the truth. We serve a generous God. He teaches us generosity. And God will provide always. Amen. Let's stand and have a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord, for being our provider. Thank you for your provision. Thank you for the way that we never have too much, we never have too little. You are the provider. You have spoken, and you said you'll provide, and we can stand on those promises. In Jesus' name, amen.
Sometimes, actually often, before my family eats, we'll sing a prayer song. And Jason picked out the Johnny Appleseed song as our closing song today, which is really good. And I never got past the second verse growing up. But apparently there's four verses. And so we're going to learn all four verses today. But when you think about this, right, the Lord's been good to me, and so I thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun and the rain and the apple seed, the Lord's been good to me. It's easy, right? Let's pull up verse 4 if we get a minute. I want to make sure we're all on the same page here. I wake up every day as happy as can be, okay? Because I know the Lord is there, watching over all my friends and me. It's a bit more of a tongue twister. So it's going to be, because I know the Lord is there, watching over all my friends and me. You guys got that? Okay. It took me a while to figure out that that's how you're supposed to sing it because it's a tongue twister. Let's go back up to the top here. Oh, the Lord's been good to me, and so I thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun and the rain and the apple seed. The Lord's been good to me, and every seed I sow will grow into a tree, and someday there'll be apples there for everyone in the world to share. The Lord is good to me.